Radio Prague News.
A group of Czechs who went missing in Lebanon may be in another state, says the foreign minister. Firefighters have brought a forest fire in North Moravia under control after over 15 hours. And Prague councillors have approved the building of a new metro line. Nobody has been in contact with the Czech state in connection with the five Czech citizens who went missing in Lebanon on Saturday. The country's foreign minister, Lubomír Zaorálek, said after a meeting of the government's crisis committee on Tuesday. Mr. Zaorálek said the government had no information with regards to the whereabouts of the five, adding that they could now be in another country. Their personal belongings were found in a taxi near the border with Syria, and it's been reported that the driver of the taxi was a man whose brother is in detention in the Czech Republic on suspicion of links to terrorism. Lebanon's police and army have launched a search for the missing Czechs, who local press said were two journalists, a lawyer, an interpreter, and a senior security official. Firefighters have brought a forest fire near the village of Mykolaivice in the Moravia-Silesia region under control after over 15 hours. A spokesperson for the fire service said officers would remain in place to complete work extinguishing the blaze, which broke out in a difficult-to-reach spot on Monday and spread to an area of 25 hectares. Damage has been estimated at 6 million crowns, and the cause of the forest fire has not yet been established. The first part of a new D line of the Prague metro system should go into operation in 2022, according to a decision taken by the City Council on Tuesday. The line, which will feature driverless trains, will at first run from Pankratz to the as-yet-unbuilt depot Písnice station in the south of the city, before being later extended. Work is set to begin on the multi-billion crown project in 3 years' time. MP Věra Kovářová says she's drafting legislation that would force the president's chancellor, Vratislav Mináš, to reveal his assets. The top 09 politician said the dubious origin of Mr. Mináš's property was the reason he'd failed to acquire the security clearance required to fully carry out his work, and that this represented a risk to the state. Mr. Mináš previously provided a property declaration for 2013 that was criticised for containing little information. The Czech Republic's tennis players will face India in the Davis Cup World Group playoffs in mid-September, in a tie to decide which country remains in the elite group. The draw for the playoffs was made in London on Tuesday. The Czech Republic won the Davis Cup twice in the last 3 years, but were knocked out in the first round this season by France. The Prague Black Panthers have become Czech American football champions for the third season in a row after beating the Příbram Bobcats in the Czech Bowl final at the capital's Eden Stadium on Monday evening. The Black Panthers lifted the title after a 52-13 win over the Bobcats, who they also defeated in last year's final. The Prague club were formed with the 2012 merger of the Panthers and the Black Hawks, who between them had won the Czech Bowl 14 times. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech Foreign Minister says there have been no demands made regarding the missing Czechs in Lebanon. Brno celebrates the father of genetics, Gregor Mendel. And in this week's In Focus, we look at Czech's charitable side. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek told journalists on Tuesday after a meeting of the country's crisis committee that the government had been contacted by no one and currently had no information about the whereabouts of five Czechs who went missing in Lebanon. At a press briefing, he said that officials were working with the theory the men had been abducted, but that this was not the only lead being examined. Jan Wellinger reports.
There has been considerable speculation, as well as everything short of official confirmation in both the Czech and Lebanese press, about the identities of five Czechs missing now for several days in Lebanon. All the same, on Tuesday, the Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek himself refused to acknowledge any details for fear the release of information could put them at risk. Several years ago, the ministry called an information embargo on the case of two Czech women who were abducted in Pakistan, whose videos later released showed them pleading for freedom and for their country to act. In the case of the five missing now, however, the Czech media have revealed first names or the men's jobs, or picked up images from the Lebanese press, specifically the Lebanese The Daily Star, which allegedly published passport photos of the missing five. Despite a good deal of information already being out there, Foreign Minister Zaorálek was adamant on Tuesday the ministry or the government would not take this path.
All I can tell you about the five is that we have not been contacted by anyone and we do not have information about their movement or where they might be now. We know that there is a search operation underway in Lebanon and we are in contact with our partners there. Even now, though, I cannot confirm with certainty that there was an abduction or that the men are still even in the country, as it could threaten their safety.
There has been speculation about why the five traveled to Lebanon, with much attention being paid to the driver who took them around, allegedly the brother of a terrorism suspect detained in the Czech Republic. The driver's whereabouts, too, are unknown. And chilling are reports that the personal belongings of the missing Czechs were found in a taxi near the border with Syria. Given the latest development, Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek warned fellow Czechs not to take travel to danger zones at all lightly.
Právě nyní v létě všichni, kteří vyjíždějí, že bohužel ten svět kolem nás se mění.
In the summer, many people travel abroad, but the world has changed. There is no question it is more dangerous and riskier than ever. Anyone who travels abroad to problem areas should consider their trip carefully. To think that we are somehow not at risk is an illusion. Today, the situation is dangerous and complicated even for our citizens.
I pro naše občany dnes je situace mnohdy komplikovaná a nebezpečná.
And regarding the missing five, the government's crisis committee is due to meet again this Friday.
Jan Willinger there on the missing Czechs in Lebanon. Now, the Moravian city of Brno has been marking a double anniversary this week, 183 years since the birth of the founder of modern genetics, Gregor Mendel, and 150 years since his discovery that led to the uncovering of the science behind heredity. St. Thomas's Abbey in Brno's own town, in whose garden Mendel made his famous discoveries growing peas, and which today houses the Mendel Museum, hosted the celebrations on Monday, including an audiovisual show created by award-winning American biomedical animator Drew Berry, backed by music from Czech-based composer Duncan Hendy, and performed by the Brno Philharmonic. Dominic Kuhn spoke with Andrei Dostal, director of the Mendel Museum, and asked him to sum up Mendel's life and work.
He was born in Silesia, in Hinčice, in a small village, in 1822. He studied at grammar school in Hinčice, in gymnasium in Opava, and at philosophical institute in Olomouc. After that, he decided to be the member of the Augustinian order, and the Augustinians invited him to the order in Brno. He came to Brno when he was 21.
How did he become interested in hereditary or genetics or growing plants and discovering their characteristics?
He started as a friar in old Brno monastery and he worked in hospital of St. Anne. The abbot, Knepp, decided to send Mendel to the studies and start with his role as a teacher. Because in the abbey, he started with the research on peas. When he came back from Vienna, where he studied at University of Vienna.
So what was he looking for? Because he obviously wasn't looking to discover genetics. Why was he? What was he doing with those peas?
He wanted to discover the rules of inheritance. He wanted to know for his gardener and for the gardeners in Brno, because he wanted to know how to improve food trees and the flowers in the abbey garden.
What he discovered, it wasn't recognized as being any kind of breakthrough during his lifetime. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's correct. He gave his lecture on his research in 1865, the meeting of Natural History Society in Brno. In 1866, he published his work in the journal of the society. But the scientists in Brno and people, they didn't understand this. And he was rediscovered at the beginning of 20th century. Three scientists in the world discovered at the same time his role as the father and founder of genetics.
The city of Brno has just been celebrating, marking the double anniversary. Artist Drew Barry did an audiovisual show, so can you briefly describe some of the events that have been happening?
We wanted to celebrate globally and internationally Mendel's work, and we prepared special concerts, the legendary Czech groups, and the animation of Drew Barry with the sound of composer Duncan Handy. And we wanted to show in the animation on the wall of the Abbey how Mendel worked and how he discovered the laws of inheritance. And we invited more than 1,600 people in the garden at the Abbey, and we streamed our show to the world from USA to Taiwan.
Andre Dostal speaking there to Dominic Yoon. And now we go over to our main feature today, In Focus. Over the past two decades, philanthropy has become an important part of Czech society, with many people being increasingly generous in giving to charity. Radio Prague looked at how the gloomy economic climate affected Czech philanthropy in the past year and how the donor culture has developed.
Czechs are often seen through a post-communist lens as skeptical about charitable giving, suspicious of non-profit organizations, believing that people should help themselves or that, at the worst, the state should help those in need. But the statistics available and the experience of experts in the field show that this may be pretty far from the truth. The total volume of charitable giving in the Czech Republic has doubled in the past decade or so. It was increasing steadily for about 10 years before 2008, when economic uncertainty may have played a role in a slight decrease or simply stagnation. But Jan Kropa from the Czech Fundraising Center, which helps NGOs develop strategies for attracting donors, says the crisis has not had a large impact on the overall volume of giving in the past couple of years.
In 2010 and 2011, individual giving has been on a rise again. And last year, it grew by between 5 to 6%, largely due to increase in corporate giving, which was the fastest growing in the past 2 years, surprisingly. Corporate giving grew almost by 11% in 2011.
In the Czech Republic, where the culture of giving to charities and non-profit organizations does not have a long tradition, the makeup of the donor pool is somewhat unconventional. Whereas in countries like the United States or the UK, 80% of all the charitable gifts are made by the richest 5% of the population, the Czech Republic's super-rich contribute only one-third of all the financial gifts. The remaining two-thirds are donors from medium and low-income brackets, and almost half of the donors within the lowest income are pensioners. I asked Mr. Kropa about what charitable causes appeal most to Czechs and what they would rarely give money for.
Czechs generally don't necessarily like to, or let's say not mature enough donors to support complicated or controversial causes, such as the Roma issues or other more difficult to understand issues such as watchdogs or think tanks. So what the mass donor likes, probably just like pretty much anywhere else, children with disabilities and animals would be the best liked items to be supported. Czechs are very generous in crisis, more so comparatively speaking than most other Central European countries, including Germany. For instance, so during the IT crisis or Pakistan earthquake or other major emergencies, Czechs have been very, very generous.
In general, this country has not really reached the same level of the number of donors or the amounts given as in most Western European countries. Although things are most certainly improving, Jan Kropa sees this more as a problem of the organization seeking donations rather than the donors themselves.
I would say that the biggest obstacle for Czechs to give is that they're not asked enough and they're not asked well enough. The amount of fundraising activities is still relatively low compared to other countries with, let's say, uninterrupted and traditional philanthropic giving. Compared to other Central European countries, Czechs are relatively very generous. And I think the major obstacle in increasing fundraising is that Czech charities are not active enough in their fundraising.
There are hundreds of charities currently functioning in the Czech Republic, providing support to a vast variety of causes. Some of them have staff members dedicated to fundraising, but many smaller NGOs just cannot afford to hire an extra person or struggle to find skilled fundraising experts who would work for a nonprofit salary. So why hasn't the nonprofit sector developed the needed infrastructure and skills to effectively raise money from donations? Jan Kropa sees the roots of the problem in the early post-communist days of this country.
The Czech NGO sector was sort of kickstarted by, in the 90s, was sort of kickstarted by large, primarily U.S. And Western private foundations. So in the 90s, we were sort of, to a degree, we were spoiled by quite easily accessible grants, mostly from large private foundations. Relatively soon, they were leaving the country. Towards the end of the 90s, there's almost no one here. But they have taught Czech NGOs to write grants and be very good at that. And even though already as early as 1995, 1996, 1997, they kept telling us, you know, you should learn to work with your constituencies and develop your donors and be more active in your fundraising because we're going to go soon. So as long as Czech NGOs had the opportunity to write a grant and receive relatively easy and relatively large money, you know, who would bother fundraising? And their departure more or less coincided and overlapped with the pre-accession funds to the European Union. So Czech NGOs swapped, and we were never forced to actually, you know, face the fact that in the long run, we're going to have to go out and ask for support from the public and from our constituencies.
The European funds, Jan points out, will end very soon as the EU cuts back on structural funding. The big challenge for Czech NGOs is now to attract a much greater number of large donors. Although there are many individuals who may be persuaded to open up their pocketbooks for a good cause, the most effective way to get large donations is to approach companies. Corporate giving is a growing trend all over the world, and the Czech Republic is no different. In fact, Pavlína Kalousová, who works for the Czech Association of Socially Conscious Companies, called Business for Society, told me that this area has seen vast changes in the past decade.
There has been enormous evolution in the area of corporate giving, and this is connected with the fact that more and more companies are looking into and integrating the general CSR, the corporate social responsibility approach, into their business. And actually, the big companies, they are looking more and more into the synergy between their corporate strategy and the area they are supporting. And sort of the biggest sort of mental change has been that the employees of the companies start to be engaged through corporate volunteering and through the employee engagement program.
In foreign-owned companies operating in the Czech Republic, the CSR strategy is usually dictated from the mother company. But for local businesses, the initiative of the employees is often the first and main building block for greater engagement in charitable giving.
People want to work in a company that is responsible, that gives them opportunity to engage in the community, but also the customers. More and more are looking into where do the products that they buy come from, and if the company that is producing them is active in CSR and behaving responsibly.
Corporate giving in this country also seems to have been almost crisis-free in the past few years. Ms. Kalousová has only seen more cautious decisions from companies in the past few months.
In the last half year, I see some kind of nervosity on the side of the corporate sector, that they don't know what kind of economic situation is coming to our country. So we see not decreasing number of companies that are giving out money to the community, but we see decreasing amounts that each company individually invests into a good cause. We try to motivate companies that it's not only about money, it's also about their general approach towards business, and they can also compensate the non-profit sector, for example, in the form of the time of their employees, or pro bono services, or in-kind donations. But there are also new ways like that. They can purchase products from handicap that are produced in non-profit organizations.
Supplementing the decrease in financial support with volunteering time or services has been a growing trend in the past 5 years. Many companies have also begun building their social responsibility models on, somewhat cynically, what they need to successfully do their business. The benefits are, of course, not only for them, but hopefully for the society as a whole.
The companies, they're looking into areas that they can support that are somehow close to their business strategy or corporate culture. They are supporting more and more projects in the area of education and cooperation with schools and universities in order to support the potential talent. Or they are investing into water conservation projects, for example, or prevention programs or projects in financial education when you talk about banks, for example. So more and more strategic giving and strategic CSR is connected with the character of the company and the area where the company is active.
Pavlina Kalousova's outlook on the efforts of nonprofits are less gloomy than Jan Kropa's, and she offered other concrete ways that charities could work on attracting corporate donors.
Nonprofit organizations should look more closely into the priorities that the companies have. In the area of HR, it is, for example, the women leadership, work-life balance. In the area of environmental protection, this is like CO2 emissions, energy savings. It doesn't have to necessarily be only asking companies for money, but offering partnerships or offering their expertise to companies, which can be used in developing the corporate social responsibility as such in the Czech Republic.
Larger companies like Vodafone, O2, or some banks have also partially adjusted to the NGO focus on grants, offering fellowships for new socially conscious projects in communities. But developing better donor relations is an inevitability for most Czech NGOs. The nonprofit sector and civil society in general in this country has grown by leaps and bounds in the past 2 decades, and economic woes have not seemed to decrease the amount of interest individuals and companies have in giving to a good cause.
Masha Volinsky there speaking in that report, which was first broadcast in 2013. If you've any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be extremely glad to hear from you. But from me, Chris Johnston, goodbye for now. Thank you very much and goodbye.